Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Hi, guys. Welcome back. Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. Hope everyone is well. Well, most of you. Some of you, I don't care at all if you're well. But most of you, I hope you're at least surviving. It's the dead of winter, you know, so things have got to be better somewhere. Stranger today, Dan Burbridge.
That's right.
How are you, Dan?
I'm all right.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Where are you from originally?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Are you from Boston or the other part of Massachusetts?
It's about 20 miles, south of Massachusetts. I'm of Boston, Easton, Mass.
Oh, Easton. Okay.
Next to Brockton, the city of champions.
Oh, I didn't
know. Rocky Marciano's from Brockton, yeah.
Is that what they call
him? Yeah, City of Champions, yeah.
How far are you from Worcester?
A couple hours, I think.
Let me ask you this. Do you know anyone from Worcester, and are they a pile of trash?
I know somebody from Worcester, and he's actually a funny kid, and he loves comedy as well.
Really?
Yeah, and he actually would say funny things like, I don't want to brag, but I'm from Worcester.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's got a good sense of humor about it.
I knew a kid when I first moved out here, was from Worcester, rich kid. And,
really?
Yeah, his dad was, his dad owned some company back east, and he was just out here basically being a rich kid.
Okay.
But he would always go on and on about Worcester and how everything would be so much better if we were in Worcester. Oh, wow. I talk about it on stage sometimes because he was so ridiculous about it.
I mean, I suppose if you compared it to like Springfield, the way those places are today, then yeah. Worcester might seem rich compared to Springfield,
right.
But in general, no, I wouldn't, no.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, cause like Massachusetts is considered a very blue state, but that's because of Boston. And then when you go out, like, do you know, there's a festival in Springfield called the Big E that happens every year. It's like, it's butter sculptures and 4-H stuff. It's like
real
redneck,
rural
stuff in Massachusetts.
Wow. Okay.
And that happens. Yeah. So, once you get outside of 495, you might as well be walking in mud, you know?
I guess I grew up in Kansas, so I didn't realize how much of the country is like that. Like there's parts of Jersey that are kind of rural.
Yeah. I had a friend who grew up or had family in Pompton Lakes, and that's the, like, it's called the Garden State. There's a lot of green there.
Yeah.
It doesn't all smell like ass.
Yeah. I always grew up being like, why would they call it that? Because it all just looks like the shittier part of New York. But that's just the part next to New York.
I lived in Delaware for like a minute, and I used to commute to a job in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And I just would be on the turnpike for 2 hours. And when you do that, it's the airport and shit smell.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I remember, I haven't been to Jersey in probably 15 years, but I just remember it smelled a lot like piss where I was.
It leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
All right. So, some of the stuff I know about you, divorced 3 times.
That's right. And one of them still has my name.
Is that right?
She kept it. She did, the middle one.
What was her, you don't have to say her name, but was her last name so bad that?
It wasn't that it was so bad. It's just that her last name was Brown.
Oh,
and I can
say
her name because it wouldn't matter. Her name is Christine Brown.
Okay.
And she was like a serious black girl from the Bronx.
Oh, okay.
Oh, shit.
Really? Like she was, I can't say certain words anymore, but you know that scene in Pulp Fiction where Marcella says, hard pipe hitting.
Yeah, yeah.
So Christine could be, but you know, she was also into big, goofy white guys, obviously.
Yeah.
And
the world needs more of those,
right?
Women. Yeah. Big, goofy white guys,
or little
not
goofy
appreciated.
White guys. Hey, but you're married, so.
Scrawny, goofy white guys.
White guys that do great. Yeah.
They do great impressions, of people that no one knows.
But when the people know them, they really know how good those impressions are. And that's the point. So she kept the name because she was Christine Brown, and we worked in EMS in New York City. So everyone gets referred to by their last name. So it was just easier. And she liked the fact that, you know, Burbridge stands out. So she kept that name. She still has it to this day.
Now, 3 divorces. Would you say that you were the problem? Is that?
You know what? You would think that.
Yeah.
After the second divorce, I was like, what's the common denominator?
Yeah.
And I realized that it was me, but then I chose to just, like, ignore that.
Yeah.
And then, like,
because round 3, at that point, you're making, you're just a bad decision maker.
It's very, well, you know what it is? It's bad decision making coupled with, like, crippling impulsivity. That's really, that's a bad combo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, After the third one, that gets sort of, you know, underscored as being, yeah, you're completely the problem.
Yeah.
So, and the third one was like the quickest one too. Just like,
what's the what was the shortest marriage you had?
There was that third one. We met online. We hung out, and like within like 6 days, we decided to get married.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I mean that's next level insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's reality show worthy.
It is. And
craziness.
What's weird is like if you know me, and now anybody's listening to this will go, "Oh yeah, this makes sense for Dan." But that wife is actually she's a well-adjusted, smart, like stable person.
Yeah.
It's just somehow she messed up and got herself in that situation and was really looking to get married. And, you know,
you were there for
I was there. Because she had this situation where like she had a long relationship that sort of imploded because she had a health issue. She had brain surgery. I got with her and the brain was mostly fixed. And then I don't know, maybe it wasn't. But so we decided to get married very quickly and it was all over and we were done within 2 years. And that includes like planning the marriage, the wedding, buying a house in New Hampshire, moving to New Hampshire, like a whole bunch of major life changes, and it was all over in 2 years.
What was the longest marriage you had?
Well, the longest one was the middle one, Christine, but that was because we got married in New York, but then I moved back to Massachusetts, so we actually stayed legally married because we were just too lazy to take care of it.
Sure.
And so, yeah, that one wound up being like 7.5 or 8 years or something.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe even longer.
And how long were you actually together during that?
Like 3.5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, and the first one was when I was very young. I was like 24 and stupid and...
24 is pretty young to
24 is very young.
Like that. But
yeah.
If you're going to be doing stupid things, 24 is a great age for it.
Yeah, I was in. I just moved to New York. Like, we had started dating when I was in Boston. I moved to New York to be with her. And then very quickly just decided, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, did it. Did it at City Hall.
Any kids?
No.
Didn't have any kids with any of them.
None of them.
So there might be kids. No kids that you know
of. None
of
that are mine.
Yeah.
The first wife had some kids. She has kids now. And the third wife has a kid now, but none of them, thankfully, are mine. Yeah.
Do you stay in touch with any of them? Do you have bad relationships with them?
The third one is just a dumpster fire.
Third one is?
The last one, yeah. Okay. So it's just absolute... awful. But yeah, the first two I'm in touch with. I'm still friendly with.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always weird to me.
It is. I don't know. It is and it isn't to me, I guess, because like on the one hand, I sort of think like when it's over, it should be over and you should go your separate ways. But then on the other hand, I think like you got with a person and you decided like you're the person in the world that I want to be with.
Yeah.
And so just because this sort of phase of a relationship didn't work out, didn't we still think that we
still
were
like
really good
human
friends? Yeah. And that's true. Like my first wife, she's brilliant and she's a nurse and it's just that, you know, I'm impossible to live with. So
okay.
That's really what did it.
Yeah, so you didn't have an issue with her
not at all. No, not at all.
I had a girlfriend in college who cheated on me and it ended very badly and I moved to LA right a little bit after that. But then she hit me up on Facebook like a year ago and was just like, "Hey, how's it going? Hope life is good." And I was like, that's so weird.
Now, do you see, I think maybe it's different with women than it is for men because maybe you guys can tell me. Like to me, if a guy did that, what that means is maybe the guy had been married, but he just got divorced and he's out trolling to get some old
looking. Yeah.
Whereas the woman, I suppose, could be doing it just like
to be
genuinely
kind.
to be kind. So is that?
She didn't seem like she was, you know, throwing any pee at me.
Right.
I was sitting in my living room with my wife and I go, "Hey, my ex from college just sent me a friend request and a message on Facebook." And she was like, "DM her, tell her to send nudes." And there was a part of me that was like, I should try and do that just to see what happened. But I just basically ignored it because, you know, I didn't want to get myself in more trouble or whatever it was. With.
Like when I was with my second wife, and I think it was before we got married, maybe it was after, but with Christine, at one point she said like, "Oh, you know, my old coworker Jed, like they had been bartenders together at Planet Hollywood." She's like, he just hit me up out of the blue and was like, said, hey, what's up? And I was like, it just sort of tweaked my little jealous, insecure parts. And
you're like, Jed's trying to fuck. Let's get real.
I didn't want to jump on that, but I said something to her about it. And she's like, listen, when we were working together, he met this German girl named, God, what was her name? Like something like Beta Goodman's daughter, like some.
Yeah.
So, and he ran off to Germany to marry her and be with her. And so Christine was like, dude, relax. He's married. He's just saying hi. And I said, I bet they just got divorced. Yeah. And then talked to him, and it turned out they just got divorced. Yeah. And he was going through the Rolodex.
Yep.
And he was getting back in touch.
Yeah, it's always like, what's that John Cusack movie?
High Fidelity.
Yeah, that's what it always seems like. It's always like, I got to figure out what's going on.
What happened?
Yeah, you find out why all the exes didn't work out.
Right. Think he would have known that he was the common denominator.
You would think.
Right? I mean, I've accepted it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I asked you quick, and you're like, that's probably the case.
It's, you know, it's like I've discovered that I make a better ex-boyfriend and ex-husband, I think.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
You're an alcoholic in recovery.
Yeah. You know, it's progress, not perfection. Day to day.
I think a lot of people, when they go sober, have a defining moment where they go,
oh boy,
this is not the right path to be on. Do you have one of those moments, or was it a gradual?
No, there's several of those.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a rock bottom. I mean, yeah, there's this.
You're like, there's a lot of rock bottoms.
There's several. Like, for instance, there was a point when I was with a girlfriend named Maggie, and a situation happened, and it was, you know, just completely gasoline was poured in the situation because of my drunken buffoonery. And I, you know, so whenever that we got over that, I said, all right, let me try to address this. And I went to this therapist, and I was like, I was like, you know, I have issues that come out when I get drunk. And so I don't want to just treat the symptoms, which would be like, let me stop drinking. Like, I want to get down deep inside and figure out, like, what is it that's down there that when I drink, it comes out and causes a problem. And the therapist was like, well, hold on, why don't you stop drinking? And I was just like, well, wait, hold on, let's not be crazy.
Yeah, yeah. There's no reason to stop the
train. And I was like, I was also like, look, I understand what you're saying, but I want to get down deep.
Yeah.
So this alcohol is superficial. I want to get down deep and address the problem.
I'm saying, why tear down the cage?
Right?
Let's just, you know, take care of the dragon inside.
The dragon is inside.
Yeah.
The cage needs to, so that was, that was one time. And then with the last wife. With the last
wife. It's a cage dragon. This is an analogy that everyone understands, Sarah.
You need a cage.
Yeah.
You want the dragon out.
Do you want the dragon to get out and eat everybody, or do you want to keep the dragon confined to a space?
Isn't there a story about how to train your dragon, though? Isn't that? So, like, if you train it, can't you take the cage away and just let it chill?
Listen. Get this guy a drink. We're going to, Someone get this guy a drink. We're going to test this theory.
Listen, you know.
When was the last time you had a drink?
What's today's date?
December 1st.
So, I don't know, sometime last month.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yesterday was the 3rd. Yeah, sometimes. It's been, since I've been in LA, it's been sort of an up and down, like, going days at a time or weeks at a time. And it's, you know, I know you are sober as well, and I don't know how much, the way it's been for me is, like, I was in the program for a bit. I would do it. I'd, like, really get immersed, and then I'd step away, and I'd sort of go back and forth. But now I'm just kind of, like, doing it on my own, and it's, like,
that's how I did it.
Days and weeks at a time, but I'm not, like, because I live in my car, by the way, so we haven't gotten it yet. But, so, out here in L.A., and I'm alone, I live in my car, like, I've been allowing myself at times to be like, you know what? Today's the day when I want to have a drink, so
right.
I'm still working on it.
What brought you to L.A.?
I needed to get away from Massachusetts and Cape Cod. Okay. I was on Cape Cod, and I had been homeless for a while. I'd been in a shelter for a while. Then I got a place, and I got a job, and I'd been working. But the situation where I was and the friend I was spending most of my time with was, like, it was a very sort of – it just was not a healthy situation. And even though he was helping me out and, like, letting me stay with him, this last job that I had earlier this year, when that ended and, like, the new job that I got didn't work out, I just thought – the whole situation wasn't working, so I just wanted to, you know, impulsively to make just a major life decision and say, let me drive my crappy car cross country and make a go of it in L.A. At least it'll be warm.
Yeah, that's really what always boils down to it. When I was choosing where I was going to move, New York or L.A.,
yeah.
I knew I was going to be super poor and barely scraping by. Yeah. And I was like, I'm not going to do that where it's cold.
It sucks.
Being freezing and without very much is a fucking way tougher pill to swallow.
So. And I've been sick of the winter, like, for years and years. I mean, even when, you know, I had a house with the last wife in New Hampshire, and, like, it's cool to have a house, and we had 8 fireplaces, and it was cool, but the winter still sucks.
Yeah.
When it snows, and, like, the snow is out on the front lawn, and then it's, like, it warms up a little bit, but then it rains, and then that snow freezes, and then you need, like, ice shoes to be able to walk.
Yeah.
It blows.
Yeah, that sucks.
I'm done with that. I can't do it anymore.
So. Do you have friends or anyone out here, or is it just a move out?
Out here, no. It's just me. So stay in touch with a couple friends that I have back
right.
on the East Coast, and like my brother and my mom.
Yeah.
So,
is there a goal? Like,
that's a good question.
With LA, like, do you want to get involved in stuff out here? Is it, is it literally just weather related?
It's very weather related.
Yeah.
It's very weather. There's always been on the back burner the idea of like something. I wouldn't say show business, but like when I lived in New York, there was a period of time when I went and like took some classes with a voiceover guy. I've thought about the idea of like trying to do that, getting with somebody and like making a demo. The problem is, you know, like Bukowski said, my ambition is handicapped by laziness.
Yeah.
So that's genuine. But yeah, it's more of like probably a, you know, pie in the sky kind of dream that maybe there was something that could come. But yeah, it was more about just getting someplace and being someplace that was warm and felt easy to exist in.
Yeah, I mean, I got really bad seasonal
depression.
Yeah, seasonal depression all through my teen years, and when I was starting in college, every winter.
Did you get one of those boxes?
No, I never did anything about it. I've always been a firm believer of just embrace the worst parts of myself.
Lean into it.
Yeah. And so it was like I would just get super depressed by February. I would be just the most miserable piece of shit of all time.
But you're drinking a ton too, right?
Yeah, I drank a lot and I smoked a ton of pot.
Did you sort of ramp it up in the winter when you got more depressed, or was it steady?
It was pretty steady. I mean, I was just happier when I was wasted in the summertime.
Yeah.
But it did. It affected me. It made me just miserable. Like the thought of going to the grocery store and that 10 seconds from my car to the front door wanting to die,
yeah.
It was like more than I could comprehend. Like those random days where you'd be like, oh, it's -35 degree wind chill outside. And it's like, well, I'm just going to stay here. And then I'd be like, no, wait, I have to go to work. And then I'd be like, well, I serve food at a shitty restaurant. I don't even want to go do that.
That's the worst.
So every part of it would just make me panic inside where I'm like, I don't want to leave my house. Once I leave my house, I don't want to go anywhere. It would just stack up all winter.
And there's a real bad momentum that gets built into that where, like, I know, like, for me now, I have that sort of same thing where I'm so used to now, because I don't do anything. And until very, like, I have a job I think I'm going to be getting and starting soon. But for months now, since, like, the middle of May, I basically haven't been working. So it's like my time is my own. And I'm very much an introvert. Like, I recharge my batteries by, you know, having solitude and listening to, you know, hours and hours of podcasts and audiobooks. So that in the beginning, like, this happened the last time I got a job, stepping back into it and having to go out and be in the world, work a job, deal with people again, it always is like those first several weeks are just like you're dealing with, like, a minefield of anxiety.
Sure.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I've done it several times, and it's, I mean, you get a little bit, you can get used to it, and it gets easier, but it's still difficult.
Yeah. I mean, when people talk about L.A. and, you know, it's just, the whole industry is just so tough to get into. My thought is always just any industry is tough to get into.
Sure.
So might as well fail trying to do the one I want as opposed to, you know, working for some insurance company doing data entry or whatever the shit is that people I grew up with are doing.
I'm also intrigued by the way that things work, like here specifically at the store, because it's like, it seems like there are different levels of people who are here, you know, and it's like, there seem to be like, maybe the people who are not so well known, and there's probably like a level of them that kind of come and go, and then there's now like the regular heavy hitters that are here, and then there's people who, you know, like you're, I think, one of them. I think Eleanor probably is one of them. People who are like the long timers who do a lot of time here and probably don't do a lot of other time in other places.
Yeah,
Brody was one of those people.
Yeah, for sure.
That really intrigues me. That there's those different levels that, you know, can be had. Even in a place like this, there's
a level of people who serve no purpose here whatsoever.
I believe that too.
And it's less now post COVID, but
yeah,
like if you were here 2 months before COVID, there were people who had been here five nights a week for the last 15 to 20 years who literally have nothing to do with comedy nor watch comedy. So it'd be like, there's just people who this is their dive bar.
Yeah.
And like, to me, I always thought that was weird. But then at the same time, when I was in my 20s and I drank and I smoked a lot of pot and I hung out, if I didn't have a spot, I would still come here.
Sure.
And it'd be like, I don't have a spot anywhere else in town. I'm just going to go to the comedy store and see what happens. And maybe half the night I would get up at like 1 in the morning and I'd be like, yeah, that was cool. I still got some stage time. And the other nights it would be 1:40. And I'd be like, I'm not getting up. But
you still get out of your house and then you went someplace and hung out.
Yeah,
and
I'm 12 drinks in and I'm having fun. And but yeah, there's just so many bizarre people that exist here.
Yeah.
There was a group, the old manager here was a guy named Dean, and he had these people who a lot of them were recovering addicts that just started coming here.
Right.
And every few months another one would add in. Sometimes people would fall out, but we just called them the Dean 15.
Yeah.
And it was just 15 people who served no purpose, were not involved with comedy, but they were here all the time acting like they, you know, like you'd see one of them like telling Sebastian he needs to move his car or something. You'd be like, you can't talk to the talent. And they'd be like, you shouldn't have parked it like that. And you're like, you literally serve no purpose here. You don't need to tell comedians. And then you go tell Dean, you got to wrangle up your crazies. I'd be like, bro, they're just hanging out. And I'd be like, all right, man.
I saw Sebastian live a few years ago with my wife and her parents, and it was completely an accident. And it was not my thing. And I felt bad.
Yeah.
It was like I was living in New Hampshire. There was a period when, you know, I was listening to a bunch of different podcasts, and I was coming to know a bunch of like comedians that I hadn't heard of before. And then one day my wife was like, hey, you want to go see Sebastian Maniscalco? My parents want to see him and he's going to be playing. And I had confused him with another comedian, some other guy with an Italian name, Joe something, who lives like in upstate New York. He's been on Marin's podcast. But anyway,
yeah, I don't know.
I screwed up the name and we went to see him, and it was after I sort of heard about him, and then I looked into him, and I was like, oh, that's not the guy. And then we went to see him. And, I mean, I know people, Sebastian is incredibly talented, and he's, you know, he's hilarious to people who are into his type of comedy.
Are you not Italian at all?
I'm not Italian.
No. Well,
but I don't think that necessarily means anything.
Yeah.
But he's a specific type.
Yeah.
And his, you know, it'd sort of be, you know, like Carrot Top. People are into Carrot Top.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
this is the first time anyone's compared Sebastian and Carrot Top. I'm excited about it.
It's very specific.
Because they're both selling out arenas, probably.
They're making a lot of money. Yeah. I've seen Sebastian's house, I think. Anyway, so we went to this theater, and I just was sitting there, and I was trying not to be a dick, because it just is not my comedy. And I was watching him, and I was kind of looking at them like, wait, are you really into this?
Yeah. Families love him.
They were kind of into him.
Yeah.
And I just tried not to be a dick and not, you know, try not to be a jerk about it.
Yeah.
It was my mistake. But
yeah, I've always loved Sebastian. I love a lot of the comedy I love is just someone who their jokes are only funny if they are the one saying it.
Yes, yeah.
Like when I started here working, Sebastian was one of the guys who was really starting to hit. And so my mentality was I started writing jokes, and then I would do them, and it wouldn't go over well. And then at some point I realized, I'm like, Oh, I'm basically just writing Sebastian jokes, and it's only funny if you're, you know, if you're that character, and I wasn't. So
I feel like Nate Bargatze is one who's who could be like that. They're definitely very specific guys. Nate's hilarious, by the way.
All right, we're gonna take a break, and then Sarah will come, and we will we'll talk some more if that's
all right.
Okay.
Absolutely, whatever you guys need.
All right, cool.
Say hi.
All right, guys, we are back. Sarah's here. We got some more questions for Dan. She's going to cover all the important stuff.
All the important stuff. So first things first. I noticed earlier you knocked on wood, and I just wanted to make sure you knew this is plastic. So you are going to have to do some follow-up knocking
on
wood.
Some more wood.
Can I say Kinahara knock on wood? Does that make a difference?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that changes everything.
Yeah.
I wasn't really. I'm not.
It just makes me nervous when I see people knock on
really?
Wood grain because I'm like, oh God.
Do they not know?
They think they're committing and it's not wood.
Well, I mean, I just knocked because it was the action of knocking. I didn't actually pause and go, oh, I really hope this is a nice big plank of wood.
I'm just saying.
You're not really
I saw
superstitious?
What you were doing.
I'm a little stitious.
I find that you're the right amount of stitious.
Yes, yeah.
I find that being superstitious is bad luck. Did you see what I did there? All right. Anyway.
That was good.
Thank you.
You're like a comedian.
I'm like a comedian?
Yeah.
A lot of the comedians would argue that I'm not a comedian.
Mm.
But your tenure at the store would prove them wrong.
Yeah. At least I am a comic at the comedy store.
Right.
Beyond that, who knows? But that's okay.
You got passed and you get paid. So as far as I'm concerned, you're
Thank
the real
you.
Deal.
That's really what it's all about. Listen, Dan stays.
Yeah, he knows what's up.
He's part of the club now. He understands that much about this place.
I'm a little bit of a nerd. I'm not going to lie.
How did you, because you've mentioned a bunch of comics, and how did you find out about the Comedy Store initially?
It was probably Maron.
Oh,
it was probably listening to him talk. Because before, when I was thinking about coming here and doing this, I was trying to think of, like, when did I even start getting into podcasts? I think I was a little bit late to podcasts. The first one I can remember latching onto was Jen Kirkman's, and that was actually, I think, pretty early on, like 2014.
Okay. Was she still hardcore talking about how unfair it is to be a woman back then?
She, you know what? She hadn't yet veered into that quite yet, because it was right at that point, like right around the time that I was getting into her and it's a little while after that in 2014 is when she first sort of like obliquely alluded to Louis. And then there was that like Jezebel piece that was like a blind item that they didn't mention her, but they alluded to it. And so it took a little while before she really kind of went off the deep end the way she's gone more recently. I still love her and I think she's brilliant, but there are times when I'm like, Jen, like give it a little bit of a
I saw her perform once and she was very funny and
she's really funny.
And then since then all I know is like when people will a lot of dudes get offended by her.
Yeah.
And so I'll see them like quote tweeting something she tweets. I'll be like, "Oh, look who's talking about men again," or something. I'm like,
I actually had an exchange with her on Twitter. Like, we DM'd a couple times. It was something like she blocked me at one point, then she unblocked me. And
what did you do?
Well, I guess what I did was I tweeted and I put Dave Anthony in the tweet too. And then she was like, "Oh, don't do that because Dave Anthony, like, he sends his guys after me, his people after me." And, like, she's like, "Don't ever mention." And so there are times when I feel like she goes too far with it.
Yeah.
But then there are times when I think she's right in being reasonable.
Sure.
It's hard to say.
She's trying to stay safe so she doesn't have to
deal
with it.
To be fair, it's incredibly fair to be a woman in this world.
Yeah.
Just to,
you guys have it easy.
Oh, yeah.
You don't
God.
Ever have to deal with any issues.
So
with
no
easy.
One harasses you.
You don't get harassed.
You get harassed.
I feel safe. Every day of my life.
You can walk down the street without someone looking at you and going, "I'm going to fight that pile of shit," which is what they do when they see me.
I've never laced keys between my fingers at night.
Right. You don't have to think about your own personal safety. You don't have to question, like, wait, did somebody touch this drink when I wasn't looking?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Speaking of, I left my coffee down here. What did you guys do to it?
I had
you
to take
should
a
be in fear.
Little bit of a leak
it's
in
an
there.
Unfair
I
time
didn't have a chance
for white
to run
men.
Out.
It is. It is a very unfair
white,
time.
White men.
We don't have it easy.
So, I've heard many, many a white middle-aged man say that in the past 2 years.
Well,
and I just it's hard because you have a knee-jerk reaction to it because it's like, well,
it's ridiculous.
But also, I understand how it kind of sucks.
Look, here's the problem. We used to get 98% of everything. And now we only get like 92% of everything.
Yeah. So what you're saying is we are persecuted.
Fall from grace.
We've lost 6% of our dominance.
I feel it. Fairness. I feel it every day. Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah.
I try to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying I'm a martyr, but I am.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so that, like, listening to Marin, I got into Marin, like, a little while after that. It was probably right around the time that he, like, right before he had Obama on. And that's when started to get into Marin and listen to him deeply. And I think that's, I always knew about the Comedy Store a little bit because, like, you know, I knew about Carlin. I knew about, you know, Robin and Richard Pryor. But it was doing the deep dive on certain podcasts that got me into it. And then it was just one would lead into another would lead into another.
Sure. Yeah. The two of the very popular podcasts, Marin and Rogan, both talk a lot about the Comedy Store. So,
and I had a moment a few years ago when I was deep into Rogan. It's the COVID stuff is I'm getting a little bit. Yeah. I really don't want to hear about ivermectin. Like when he had Shane Gillis and Mark Normand on the other day, and Ari, like that, it was a couple weeks ago. That was like a classic, like 3 hour just comedian podcast. Yeah. That was brilliant. That was great. I love Mark Normand. I love Ari and Shane too.
Yeah.
That was great. But to listen to him, like to hear Aaron Rodgers say, like my new friend Rogan told me about ivermectin, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe listen to doctors, but who am I?
Aaron Rodgers' fall from grace has been so spectacular to watch. It's amazing. Like
he was my second favorite quarterback after Tom Brady. He was my guy who was like, I love watching him play.
Yeah.
He's spectacular, but I've lost all respect for him.
He literally, because he was so calm and cool when the Brett Favre shit went down years and years ago,
we were
just like, man, this guy is really just a noble guy. And he's been so likable. You know,
he's been likable. He's been really good.
You're like, he's kind of silly. But
Olivia Munn? Come on.
Yeah.
Wait, what did he do? I know nothing about sports or anybody important.
He got COVID and missed a game a couple weeks ago. And early in the season, they asked him if he was vaccinated. And he said, yes, I am immunized. And he didn't go any further. And then he's been doing all his press conferences and stuff without a mask on, which the rule is if you're not vaccinated, you have to wear a mask.
Right.
So he didn't do any of that. And then he got COVID. And then they said, you know, he's out for 10 days required. And people are like, why? If you're vaccinated and you get COVID, you just have to test negative twice.
Right.
And you can go back, even if it's like 4 days later. But they said he was out for the 10 days. And then it basically was he's not vaccinated.
Yeah.
And he was just lying. And he was like, well, I never lied. And it's like, you said you were immunized.
You danced around it.
Literally means nothing.
Yeah.
And then
you did a semantic dance and you wanted
to have an immune system.
Yeah.
And then he turned into basically like the
I did my own research, white bro guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The right wing fucking idiot. I'm not gonna let science dictate my plans. You're like, oh God. And his girlfriend is that weird actress.
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah, who you know, makes her own soap and makes her own cheese and writes articles about making her own
cheese. She looks good and she's on that HBO show. And so, you know, she's...
You're saying you would put up with the craziness for the hotness.
No, I wouldn't because, you know, so I have standards. I wouldn't put it... No.
We all have limits.
Yeah. So he just turned out to be a flaky weirdo.
Really disappointingly. Like you said, I really liked him. Like he seemed like a good, you know, he had like a good sense of humor. He would joke about how when people would meet him in person, they'd always say to him like, oh, I thought you'd be bigger. Because, you know, he's like 6'2 and weighs like, you know, I don't know, 210 pounds. Like he's not
a normal size bigger.
He's a normal size bigger guy. And he's a spectacularly talented guy.
Yeah.
But to see him do this, it just is so disappointing. And you go like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't understand the whole... So the guy who's been in charge of infectious diseases since the Ronald Reagan administration, now we're suddenly thinking he's not qualified to do his job?
Yeah. Well, he's saying things I don't like now. And for 3 decades, I didn't know he existed. So he was just quietly doing his job.
This new guy.
Yeah.
Captain Orange said that guy is bad. So now I have to say that he's bad.
It's Captain Orange 6969. And he knows his stuff. He's got a wizard as his profile picture.
He was a Jehovah's Witness, right?
Yeah, he was. Indeed. Yeah, the Fauci stuff is amazing to me. I don't get it. But.
And the thing with, like, have you seen, like, Lara Logan came out on Fox News, like, yesterday or the day before, and she compared him to fucking Joseph Mengele.
Yeah, yeah.
And now has doubled down on that.
Yeah.
I don't get, like, the ridiculous hyperbole of the things that they're pulling out.
Well, people are, at this point, faces of, you know, the different sides of the political spectrum are just pandering to what they know will get the base riled up. Yeah. So, you guys think Fauci is bad? Well, in that case, he's exactly like that torturous Nazi doctor. Right. You're like, okay.
Yeah, I'm close enough. They're both doctors. They're both probably bad. I disagree with both of them. They must be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird fall.
I'm going to do a tangent here. Yeah. Speaking of bad, you said you're impossible to live with.
Oh, geez.
I want to know more about this.
Well, I'm just, I mean, that's my, I guess that would be what I surmise from having three ex-wives. I mean, yeah, I'm kind of.
Well, what can you identify as things that would be difficult to handle?
I'm a slob.
Okay.
That's one.
When you get drunk, are you violent or angry? Are you a happy drunk?
Not a happy drunk, but it would be more like I would be, when I had blow-ups, like I had a blow-up with one girlfriend, I had a blow-up or a couple with the last wife. It wouldn't be violent, but it would be like shitty behavior, shitty, you know, like
belligerent,
lashing out, saying like, bad. You honestly, I think there's like probably some little bits of like something that could be considered borderline personality, honestly. The way that when I get in relationships, I'll do the thing where, like, once that person is with me and I know that they're with me, like in the beginning, I think I'm more like a sort of a normal average person, and you know, you have a back and forth, you get to know each other, things are fine. But then when it's like when we're together, it's like, okay, we're together now, and then I do the thing of like, I'm gonna make you leave me to prove that you don't really want to be with me, because that's part of like my dysfunction.
Got it.
Yeah. And so that's what we get engaged a lot with, the drinking.
If you really love me unconditionally, then here are some conditions to deal
right
with.
Here's some like I mean, very early on with the last wife, and like I told you, we decided to get married really early. We bought a house together within like 3 months.
Wow.
And before we had moved into this house, we went to this party or something at her friend's place. And I got, like, blackout drunk, and apparently some of the things I said to her were just, like, God, awful. Just,
yeah.
And then I walked away from the party. This is in Newton, which is outside of Boston, and I walked so far away, like, that she didn't know where I was, her friends didn't know where I was. I was walking around, like, in the middle of the night for, like, a couple of hours. She went back home. They went out and, like, looked for me in the middle of the night, and then, like, finally I wound up getting back home. But, yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
So,
do you know where a lot of that stuff comes from?
Yeah.
You don't have to talk about it if you don't want, but out of curiosity.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think, like, you know, there are four kids in my family, and I'm the youngest. And
me
too. Really? There you
youngest
go.
Youngest of four. Yeah.
But are you like healthy and well adjusted? Did your
I've got issues.
You got a nice hat.
You know, being the youngest,
secret psycho. What's
being
going
the youngest,
on here?
Everyone just assumes that you know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, and
really?
And for me,
okay,
that was my experience. Right, it was just kind of like, oh, she'll figure it out.
Yeah,
and so I just was constantly figuring things out. So I have a lot of stuff with failure and just not knowing or thinking that I know how to do anything right, because, you know, that was the expectation, that I would figure out how to do it properly.
Right.
Okay. I think. My mother, it wasn't until I was like well into my 30s that, like, I had issues with my mother when I was younger, and there was definitely tension. We were kind of estranged. And then when I was, at some point when I was like probably in my 30s, this hit me, and it sounds so stupid and silly, but when you actually realize it, it is kind of amazing. Like, something happened, and I was just thinking about her and what happened, you know, when I was a little kid and she was raising me. And then it just hit me, and I was like, oh yeah, she was a person. She was like, she was, you know, your parents are like this thing that's not even a person. It's
right.
Like some sort of authority.
It's almost
entity.
A god, yeah.
Right. And when
well,
it hit me.
I think that also has to do with how the example that they show you.
Yes.
Are they an individual, or are they sacrificing their life to raise you?
Yeah. And
which is what my mom did.
What she went through stuff like, you know, my two older brothers, like, they were born within about 18 months, and she was very young. She was like 22 or 23. And then there was my sister, and then there was me. And in each of those stages, you know, different things were going on in her life and in my parents' life. And with me, from the time I was born until I was like 5 or 6, her father died and then her mother died, like in that period. And she was also dealing with like depression and agoraphobia.
Okay.
So I think when my die was cast, like from 0 to 4, I think I developed some, you could say, attachment issues.
Sure.
And that's what manifests in relationships.
Right.
And that's the most frustrating thing, is like to know what it is, but then to repeat it over and over and over and over
it's
again.
It's frustrating.
Even when you, like, you know what it is, and you think, no, this time's going to be different, and then you go, no.
Yeah.
So that's where the impossible to live with comes in.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we're all salvageable.
I don't know if that's true, but I mean, I
think it is true. I'm not saying I think it is true. I think it just, it takes different amounts of time for all of us.
I think most of us are. I'm not sure, you know.
I think there's plenty of people who are permanently broken, but I also don't like people. So,
I think the people that are permanently broken have no interest in changing or being a different version of themselves, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are terrible people, but are very fond of themselves.
Or how about the terrible people who are just not self-aware and it doesn't matter, and they just sort of bulldoze through life and they don't give a fuck, and there's almost something to envy in that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there is.
Because, you know, when you're in your own head, when you're self-aware and you sort of know where your blind spots are and what your mistakes are and the patterns that you repeat, you know, it sort of gives you pause before you're going to do anything new, like jump into a new relationship. And then when it happens and you fuck it up again, you're like, dude, life is supposed to be getting easier as I get older, not more difficult.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating thing.
I think the same thing is true just in terms of people who go through life unaware. With in comedy, there's so many people who are so incredibly untalented, who have so much belief in themselves and push themselves into situations constantly where I'm just like, I feel like I'm a good comedian, but I can't for the life of me try and sell myself because it makes me feel like a fraud.
I've heard that.
And there are so many people who I watch and I'm just like, I can't believe this person does comedy. And they're out there literally selling themselves. And Comedy Central or Netflix is like, yeah, we're on board with that confidence.
And you're
they're confidence horrible. Goes a long
confidence
way.
Confidence does go a long way.
Very long way.
Yeah, as well as just
bluffing.
General ability to be unaware.
Unaware. You know, ignorance is bliss. Yeah. It really is.
Like, there's comics who are on 7 shows a night in L.A., and I again can't believe that anyone booked them.
Like right now,
they're so annoying that people are like, "Yes, you can do the show. It's fine."
For all the comedians that I know, and I'm trying to rack my brain right now because I want to come up with a name to be able to throw it out at you and let just see the expression on your face, because I'm sure there's got to be a couple that I know that you would probably just go like, "Yeah, that I'm talking about that one."
Yeah, but, there's lots of them. I mean, I think there's maybe 7 comedians worldwide that I think should do comedy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so let me ask you this. I don't want you to like shit on anybody on a podcast, but like, who are a couple of, say, like the regulars here at the store who like you're fans of? I assume there must be a couple.
Fans of.
I think Fahim Anwar is amazing.
He's great.
He cracks me up. Brian Simpson is funny.
I don't know Brian. I know Fahim a little bit.
God, I don't know.
All right.
It's tough. It's hard for me to enjoy
Rick
anything.
Ingram.
I'm a huge fan of me.
Well,
Sarah Tiana.
No one does what we do. That's the thing.
The other thing is like
good people and great comedians. I mean, Sarah and I got a different thing than most people.
Well, and here's the thing too. Like for me, there's a definite. I wouldn't say there's a definite break, but there's definitely a difference between like some of the people who I'm like the biggest fans of. It's the podcast stuff that I'm like really a fan of.
Yeah.
And I don't like
the authentic conversation.
Yeah, and it's what comes across when, you know, like people like, just recently I forget exactly how it happened, but I stumbled into Giannis Pappas's podcast, his new one, and I did a deep dive on that, and he was always someone who he never grabbed me as far as like his stand-up or being on other podcasts, and this time around, something grabbed me, and I find him hilarious.
Yeah.
Tim Dillon is one that he's so out there.
Yeah, I loved him. It's funny. I said something about how funny Tim was on stage, and
people got upset.
People got very upset.
Well, because he's
like,
out there.
Yeah, and they're just like, oh, right-wing propagandists. And
Alex Jones's friend.
Yeah, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, I literally saw him do a whole set in the main room where he, I mean, I guess he was telling jokes, but he was just crushing nonstop.
Yeah.
And it was fucking hysterical. He was doing like a whole bit about some lady in Philadelphia started yelling at her neighbor about his trash cans and he shot her to death. And he's like, that's how you want to die in Philadelphia. It's basically like a bit about how like that's the warrior's death if you live in Philadelphia. And it's fucking hysterical. And so I said something, people just like, well, I can't believe
Eleanor agrees.
Yeah. That's right? why I immediately sent a text to Eleanor. I'm like, this is the funniest bit of all time.
Yeah.
People
I mean,
like, this is fucking outrageous.
He's sort of out of his mind, but he's hilarious. Yeah. So like, the people who are like really at the top of my list, it's the stuff probably that they do on podcasts, and there's so many that I listen to all the time. So it's like I wouldn't necessarily even be familiar with everybody's stand up as much as their podcast stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. It's way more available. And,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot more podcasts out there than there are people's stand up comedy. So
right,
yeah, there's so many.
Yeah.
It's endless. Really,
the thing that bothers I have no problem with any comedian doing podcasts. I do have a problem with podcasters pretending to be comedians.
Yeah.
Like when I see some of the road clubs that are like booking people, I'm just like, really? You're going to fucking book that person? And if I know someone at the club, I'll text them like, why the fuck are you booking so-and-so? And they're like, they sold out 5 shows.
It's just like the movie industry where they are casting people because of their Instagram
followers. Influencers.
Yeah. Because they're influencers.
Yeah. It's out of control.
It's just unfortunate, you know.
Speaking of that, is Kylie Jenner going up in the main room?
Hopefully. We're working on it. Ever since her boyfriend murdered those people in Houston. Wait, is that the right Jenner? Am I thinking a different one? Someone booked. They had three names co-headlining at a club in Phoenix. And I was talking to the manager of the club, and I go, who the fuck is that? And he goes, they're YouTube stars. And I go, and they do comedy? And he goes, kind of. And I go, what does their show consist of? And he goes, it's pretty terrible. They each do like 10 minutes, and then they do an hour and 30 minutes of meet and greet.
Meet and greet, question and answer.
And so you can, basically the people come to see them.
Yeah, it's fan based.
It's all fan based, and they sold out. But like one of the guys comes out with a big bin full of dildos and trips and flings the dildos everywhere and then spends 10 minutes picking up the dildos and be like, oh, this is so embarrassing. And the people are loving it.
So it's conceptual.
Yeah.
They can do that at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
Still do comics at night. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And one of them they did, he said the show start at like 4 in the afternoon because a lot of the people who come to the shows are like 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm horrified by the thought of that being going on, but it's a business, so they don't care.
Right.
They just want to put up whoever
they can.
There's
a TikTok theater in Hollywood now, right? So, I mean, like,
real thing?
It could be.
So.
I know the YouTube theater is part of the...
I think there's a TikTok one, too.
The SoFi.
Like, it's just named that?
I think so.
Okay.
It's not like a theater for TikTok.
Well, no, I don't... Yeah, that's,
can you imagine how short the shows would be?
God.
But,
TikTok is baffling to me. I've never been on it. I will never do it.
I downloaded it once.
Yeah.
It's
for an afternoon, and I felt like I blacked out for like 2 hours, and then I deleted it immediately.
Yeah.
It was. I lost brain cells.
Someone texted me. They said Josh Nassar has 2 million followers on TikTok, and I go, fuck that app forever.
And people make money, real money,
yeah,
on TikTok.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Big money, yeah.
So, yeah, that bothers me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have, like, 10 or 20 million followers, you know, and then it's like you put up a few videos a day and you integrate ads. And
yeah. I will say.
It's a good business method.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
I get it.
And I feel like if I really wanted to, I could do it.
Right.
But I feel like I'd be selling my soul.
Yep.
And I could never. And also, who wants to watch me? But, who cares?
I would watch it. Get out there. I've changed my mind. If you're willing to TikTok, I will get heavily into TikTok.
Well, I don't know if you ever watch Your Mom's House, but you know, Christina, they have like basically a regular segment where she puts up TikToks, and it's ridiculous and disturbing.
Oh, you kind of have a Tom Segura vibe.
Yes.
Yeah, I've
gotten
that. You've heard that.
I have.
You're like a doppelganger for him.
When I'm less fat and my beard is a little bit longer, I did this one time a few years ago. I was looking at some Your Mom's House stuff, and I took a couple of screenshots where the the view was of Tom from like over here three quarters, and I sent it to my brother and he thought it was me.
That's
like,
nice.
Like full on face, it's not so much, but right. Yeah, the profile.
Certain
bit.
Angles.
Yeah, certain angles. If I could only have his money, then, you know.
Yeah.
But so she, at the end, like every one of their podcasts, they do a segment of TikTok videos, and they're really fucked up, but they're also kind of like hilarious and really stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just not into it.
There's,
I know I'm not on the mic, but there's one guy that just like talks, was trying to get off of soda, and he was this Indian guy, and he'd be like, every TikTok was just like, hello, no fizzy drinks today.
All right. I'm listening. People with accents are funny.
That's
always.
Inherently funny.
No fizzy
right.
drinks.
No fizzy drinks.
I mean, it's literally like 300 videos. Yeah. I'm just saying, I didn't have any fizzy drinks today.
Unbelievable.
That's discipline. That should be rewarded. I hope he's making money.
It would be hard. I feel like if I made TikTok videos, it would just be about how I don't respect anyone watching my TikTok videos.
And that you
doesn't
know what?
Seem like a good way to
actually,
build fans.
I hate all these people.
It might actually work for you.
Yeah. All of you listening right now, I despise. It's hard for me to not do that on a podcast. You know?
Did you do it upstairs just now? Is that what happened?
I came out violent is the way I would describe it. I told the crowd to meet. They were so bad for Jezelnik that I just stood at the side of the stage for like 5 minutes just building up my hatred for the crowd.
All right, can I ask a clueless fan question?
Sure.
So, I mean, you're a regular and you're going up all the time. Are you doing like 7 sets a week? I do
5 sets a week here usually.
And so being a regular and you do have a fan base, and obviously the pod is like working on expanding that too. When you go out on an average night, is it like total? Is it tourists? Is it locals? Is it half and half? Is it?
I would say on just an average random week during the year, it's probably 60% LA people and 40% tourists.
And how does that work for you?
It's great.
Okay.
Because even the LA people aren't actually from LA.
Exactly.
And there's probably 10% of the people are born and raised Los Angelinos.
If that, probably.
If that, But like this last week the crowds were the worst because it was Thanksgiving. And so it was a lot of groups of people with their families. And when people come to a comedy show with their family, it's usually one person that wants to go to a comedy show.
Dragging the rest.
And 4 or 5 people who, I guess we could do that.
All right, they're going to have drinks there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're just like, okay. A lot of times they bring mom and dad. And then they would normally laugh at inappropriate things you say. But now, because they have the pressure of mom and dad being there, they don't feel comfortable laughing at inappropriate jokes or jokes about fucking or whatever it is.
Right.
So you see a lot of people like kind of looking. I'm like, don't look at your fucking dad. You be your own person. You're a 29-year-old
You're an adult.
Man.
Right. If you're going to laugh,
like
let it come out.
The audience.
Yeah. Right.
Dad, you see dad laughing, you have to point it out. I mean, like, your dad is laughing, all right? He is the exact terrible person that I want him to be. But holiday crowds are fucking terrible.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
But that's okay, too, because then you just attack the shit out of them. That's what I do. You want to know my secret? Attack them immediately.
From my familiarity several years ago, where, like, the really late-night spots, are there people going up that are regular on those late-night spots that are getting, it might be a really thin crowd, but they're, like, the people who are really sort of the diehard fans, is that still a thing or less so?
Somewhat. It's a little different since we came back from COVID, because shows don't go as long as they used to. But they're still, you know, it's no longer 1:50 in the morning and you're happy to go up for 4 people like it was.
Like, who does the Brody spot?
Different people now. Just not someone that's...
Yeah, okay.
Like, if Holtzman's here, he'll do it, which is amazing. It's still amazing.
I would see him on, like, Instagram or I guess maybe TikTok, too, I think. But maybe just maybe Instagram. But
you can't remember because you lost brain cells when
I
you
did,
were
well,
on
I,
TikTok.
I have lost brain cells. But the thing that... I first heard about him from Rogan years ago on the podcast, and he would talk about the stuff that Holtzman would say in his act, and I was like, this guy sounds crazy, and I checked out some of his stand-up, but then when you watch him on Instagram, he looks like Hal Linden. He looks like just this old guy who's doing like these silly, I'm an old guy putting up these short little videos, but his shit on stage is so off the wall.
It's bonkers.
And hilarious.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
He's a very bizarre human, and he's also a tremendously kind person, which is a very weird dynamic.
Yeah.
when my first kid was born, Brian came up to me and he was like, "Congratulations, Dad!" And I'm like, "How did you know?" And he's like, "I talked to Eleanor." And I go, "Oh, okay." And then he goes, "Oh, I should have gotten you a card." I'm like, "Yeah, aww. You don't have to get me a card." Wow. The next night he shows up and he gave me a card with like $200 cash in it.
Aww.
I'm like, "I go, dude, you don't have to give me money." He was like, "You had a baby." Okay, man.
That's great.
But yeah, he's one of those people, you're like such a good human. Then he goes up on stage and the shit he talks about, you're like, my dear God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like when I heard his stuff like several years ago, I was like, oh, this is, I'm sort of surprised that, like, I wonder if he's been sort of, you know, adjusting his stuff to sort of deal with, you know, people's sensitivities that, you know.
Yeah, I really don't. And to me, his act hasn't changed per se in the 20 years I've seen him.
Yeah.
It's just the society has gone so far towards nothing should be offensive that his offensiveness is almost welcoming in a comedy club environment. Like, I can't even imagine watching Holtzman doing his act on, like, a theater.
Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah, yeah. Or, actually, I would pay money to watch Brian Holtzman on Kelly Clarkson.
Or, like, or, you know, like a college, like he's some liberal
arts
school.
They'd be horrified.
Yeah. Catholic school.
Yeah. Oh.
Notre Dame.
There are so many places now that we're talking about that I want to see Holtzman perform.
Get a list going.
Yeah, it's something different. But he's, you know, he's such a good dude.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And I saw him once, too, working as a parking enforcement in Manhattan Beach.
Really?
And he was in...
Is that his day job?
That was his day job for a while.
Oh, cool. He
was
full uniform?
Full uniform.
Yeah.
Was he doing like the... Oh, parking enforcement, like ticketing?
Yeah.
Oh, he was ticketing.
Yeah. At this point, it was the middle of summer, and they had set up a roadblock right down by the pier on Manhattan Beach so that more cars couldn't come down there.
Were you living in Manhattan Beach at the time?
No, I was living in West Hollywood, but I lived in Manhattan Beach for like 5 years. So
I was going to say, what a weird twist of fate. Yeah.
So he lives down there. He moved down there, and he got a job doing that. And I was just going down to the beach with my friend who was in town, and I look over, I'm like, is that Holtzman? And we made direct eye contact from like 100 yards. And he's like, Rick Ingram! He started screaming, and he's in full parking meter gear. And his coworkers are kind of like...
Citations are just flying off of his body as he runs to you.
So I talked to him for like 10 minutes, and then I go to the beach. We just went down to the beach for like maybe 20 minutes so that my friend from out of town could say he went to the beach. And so 20 minutes later, we're walking back up. We're walking up the hill. And I see Holtzman kind of standing over there, and I'm like, do I wave? What do I do? So I kind of waved at him, and he's like, where you going? You want to talk some more? And I'm like, no, we got to get back.
Wow.
He was like, oh, okay, I see. You don't want to talk to me. I'm like, no, that's not it. I just, you know, we got to go. He's like, it's fine. Go. I'll see you at the club. I'm like, okay. So I'm walking up the street. I make it like maybe 2 blocks, and then I just hear, August Hamilton.
No.
August Hamilton, ladies and gentlemen. And it's Brian in the parking enforcement SUV talking over the speaker. And he's pointing at me out the window and shouting that I'm Argus Hamilton from the Comedy Store. And there's got to be 50 people on the sidewalk just looking at me like,
Who the fuck is Argus Hamilton?
Yeah. Who is he talking about? Why is he yelling? Why is he telling us to go to the Comedy Store? I'm like, oh, this is so fucking weird. And then like 2 months later, I'm like, how's parking enforcement? He's like, I've moved on. I'm scraping up dead animals now. I'm like, oh, okay. Take them off people. Can we get Brian off of people? Let's put him in charge of dead animals. Perfect job. Is there anything you want to promote, Dan?
Follow me on Twitter at The Science Oven.
The Science Oven.
Yeah.
I like that. That's very bizarre.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure, ask whatever you like.
What kind of work do you do? You said you were...
truck driver?
You're a truck driver.
Yeah, okay. I just got a job. Assuming I had... So they take your fingerprints and they send it away to the FBI, and there was one little blip that came back that I had to just take care of. I had to have my brother help me out and download my record from the state of Massachusetts and send it on to them. Just a minor thing, but I...
Yeah.
One little murder and they won't let you drive a truck.
It follows you your whole life.
Man, they're so judgy.
Scamblers.
It's one, you can't, you know, one mistake. No,
he's good at what he does, guys.
So, yeah, I should be, this is December now. I think this month I will be starting, I'll be driving shuttles at LAX for either Delta or American Airlines.
Oh, awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool.
Very cool. Yeah. All right.
Well, I hope to see you very soon because I really fucking want to travel.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Yeah, I'll pop in, and if I have any discounts I can give you guys, I'll send them over here.
Well, I'm not flying anywhere, but I got a discount on the shuttle ride down at LAX.
If you want to just ride around.
I'm heading down. Do you want to go for a shuttle ride?
Let's just do a shuttle ride.
Let's do a shuttle ride.
Take a ride. So see the sights.
This is three, huh? Interesting.
Imagine Holtzman.
How many terminals have you been to there? Have you been to the mall?
Holtzman used to do baggage claim, or he loaded bags onto planes at LAX for a long time, and every time I went to LAX, I would just stare out the window like, if I see Holtzman loading bags onto this plane, I'm getting off the plane for sure.
He's a hardworking guy, I guess.
Yeah, he has done a lot. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate
you
being here,
Rick. Thank
man.
You, guys. Thank you, Sarah. It's
very fun.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so keep listening, guys. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Follow us on everything. If you want to be a guest, DM Ingram Pod. And just tell us a little bit about yourself. I'd be a good guest. And if you're in LA, we will try and work it out so that we can have you on. So keep listening. Thanks, guys. Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter. That's IngraHam Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye to everyday people.
Special thanks to the Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.